On this episode of The Checkdown, we discuss Brew McCoy transferring back to USC after a short stint at Texas. We then break down the Memorial and Patrick Cantlay's come-from-behind victory. We then dissect the first two games of the NBA Finals. Very thrilling so far. And finally, the Blitz package heats up, per usual, so stick around for that. But first, here's your jam of the week. This is Never Go Back by Dennis Lloyd.
Go back, no, no, no. I never go back. It's not my baby. No te queda nude. No te queda nona anymore. I will not leave you. Baby, don't you leave me. Baby, don't you love me anymore. Always look around, girl, trying to see the good thing. Why you always say that you never done wrong? Why
you know, Kyle, never go back. I thought once you made a decision, you could never go back, but apparently Brew McCoy has taught us otherwise. USC, no, Texas, no, back to USC. This is the first football news we've had in a while, and I'm pretty juiced about it.
I know, and it makes it even more interesting that it's, I mean, rivals.
Yeah.
Right? It's not like you're going from South Florida to Michigan or something. Like, you're going from SC to Texas, and now making the decision to come back to USC. I was not expecting this at all.
Right. I mean, I think that we can both say we're happy about the decision. And I think the thing that stands out the most is this is why I think it's kind of a good idea if kids are ready and do have all their credits to go to college early like he did. So he enrolled at Texas a semester early in January and was able to be there for a full semester and realized he didn't like it. And then he decided to leave, which I don't necessarily think is a bad thing because technically his game playing hasn't started.
Yeah, and I think for me, this kind of solidifies why you can't give 18-year-olds this much freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like he goes to – and here's a little quote from 24/7 Sports in the last couple of days, right? Sources close to McCoy said the reason for the former five-star prospect going back to USC was a severe case of homesickness. And a sense he'd simply be more comfortable closer to home at USC, where he could play with a handful of former modern-day high school teammates, including Trojans quarterback JT Daniels and receiver Amon-Ra St. Brown. Well, duh.
Right.
Right. Like, that's why he committed to USC in the first place. And I think you give these kids that have had so much success in high school a little an ability to be a little, well, I want to try this. I don't know what I want to do. I don't know who I want to be. And all of a sudden, kids are entering the transfer portal. Velus Jones,
yep,
from USC is back. He entered the transfer portal, never ended up going anywhere, and now he's back at USC. So, like, that the word committed is there for a reason.
Right.
Because you commit to a school, and commitment means you stick to what you said you're going to do originally. So, super, super stoked.
Yeah.
Brew McCoy back, but the NCAA is going to figure something out because we can't – the second, like, a coaching situation or a school's program – has one thing go wrong, half a dozen kids enter the transfer portal. It's just not good for the sport.
That's fair. Yeah. No, I mean, that's a good point. The thing that I guess I can kind of wrap my brain around is one, that he's coming back to USC, kind of homers. Oh, well, screw it. Second of all, I think that I can wrap my brain around that, like I said, he went a year early or a semester early from high school. So he kind of, you know, he's technically still maybe only 17 and got to feel what it's like to be away from home and realized pretty quickly that he didn't fit in. It wasn't like he played a season with them, which I can understand that being frustrating for a team that, you know, he's there for a full season, maybe plays, maybe doesn't, and then takes off. But for the most part, I think the fact that he went, it was really just spring ball, working out, figured out, hey, I'm either not really fitting in, I'm not going to get a lot of playing time, I miss home, whatever it is, and he came back. So I can wrap my brain around this one a little bit more because he didn't ever actually set foot on the football field. Yeah. It's a little bit more later as guys, you know, are there for a year, 2 years, and then decide to transfer. It's kind of like, man, that is unfortunate. But at the same time, it's there, you know, 4 or 5 years of playing college football. And I think they should have a little bit of say in what they do. And if they make a commitment, try and stick it out to the best of their ability.
Yeah, I mean, and in his defense, these are the rules. So yeah, if you're him, like, why not take advantage of the fact that the rules have been loosened a little bit and he has the ability to almost like feel USC out and then feel Texas out and like make a decision later, which seems like, you know, colleges shouldn't really have like a tryout period. It doesn't seem right. But I don't know what this is about his personality. I'm stoked that he's 6'3", 205, and he was the number one wide receiver in his position, number 12 overall prospect in 2019. Like regardless of what is to come from him, very, very excited to have him at USC and definitely excited not to have him at Texas because Texas is going to be good already. So,
yeah. And the thing that kind of stands out to me about this whole story is, do you think there is an app for the transfer portal similar to like Tinder or Bumble or any sort of other dating app where these guys can enter back in and teams are like swiping right on these guys, like, come to us, come to us.
And each school has like a profile that's like great barbecue, lovely women, the average weather in summer and winter. And then they're like, nope, swipe.
Right.
Closest downtown proximity to the campus. The number of sororities and fraternities.
Under the table money per month. You know, whatever. They just kind of...
I wasn't going to go there, but you went there.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, I think it's big news for Southern California football. He's a local kid, so good to have him back. Obviously, going back to USC was his original pick. Mm-hmm. And I think with, you know, offensive coordinator Graham Harrell, from North Texas. I mean, the guy went 9-4, 9-5 over the last 2 years at North Texas, put up ungodly numbers and just an offense that is pass heavy. So I think it might fit him a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, he has a better chance for playing time at USC than he does at Texas. Texas has a really strong wide receiver core that's seasoned, mm-hmm. and USC is, they're not necessarily rebuilding, but there's positions that are open for the taking if you're that good. And I think that the connection he probably has with JT and Amon-Ra and those guys gives him a leg up over some of the other kids his age. So,
yeah.
I mean, it was a better situation from the jump. Mm-hmm. Being a modern day kid, being from Southern California, with the way the offense is structured with their youth versus Texas, the only positive to the Texas move would be Texas is probably going to be better sooner.
Fair.
USC. I mean, I hope that's not the case.
Right.
But I mean, if you're looking at it objectively, that's probably the case.
Yeah. But with the Graham Harrell offense, you know, at least three wide receivers on the field at all times, four, maybe even sometimes five, you're thinking, hey, yeah. So you have Michael Pittman and Amon-Ra St. Brown coming back for sure. And then those other spots are kind of open. So go be the other side wide out for Michael Pittman and have two big, strong, fast wide receivers, both on the outsides. So I don't know. I mean, we'll see how it all plays out. It'll be fun, but we got some football news, which has been fun. Cause right now we've had a little bit of a drought as far as football is concerned,
to say the least,
but there has been some interesting sporting events like the Memorial Golf Tournament last weekend. It was huge. I just, before we get into the actual gameplay, and I know you want to talk about Tiger, can we just say first that I have guessed the champion 2 weeks in a row? Brooks Koepka at the U.S. Open, Patrick Cantlay at the Memorial.
Yeah, Brooks, not you didn't take a huge leap
right
on that one, right? Like, he had won the last two U.S. Opens. He's defending champ of the PGA Championship. It wasn't necessarily a safe, easy pick because nothing's easy in golf. There's 125 people in the tournament. But picking Patrick Cantlay to win the Memorial, I mean, you're just on fire.
You know, if you remember, Patrick Cantlay was actually my dark horse of the U.S. Open, too, and he had a pretty good finish. I think he was like top 15 or top 20.
Yeah, so, and he wasn't even allowed to be your dark horse for the Memorial because Vegas had him
too high,
the third highest odds to win.
Yeah, I know. So I'm going to hopefully continue on this trek. I think the Canadian something or other is this weekend.
The RBC Canadian. Actually, the RBC Canadian has actually a really strong field this week.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I was shocked by that, but it does.
Before we get into that, and I am forced to choose a winner because I'm not ready to pick one yet because I want to stay on my 2 week streak. Let's do the Memorial. So obviously, Martin Kaymer was up, what, four strokes going into the final day, and he shot even, which was unfortunate for him because Adam Scott shot four under and Patrick Cantlay shot eight under.
Yeah.
So, they just kind of ran right past him. Kaymer looked like he had hurt his hand at one point. He was kind of spraying the ball all over. I think he had two bogeys in a row. So, unfortunate for him if he did get injured, you know, late in that round because you hate to see that. But at the same time, he didn't play well before he got hurt really either. He was kind of all over the place. So it's kind of how it ended up, but Cantlay had a great Sunday, shooting 8 under, and just kind of looked really confident the whole time.
Yeah, Sunday was actually really interesting because Tiger teed off early, right? Yeah. And so, and he was out of it, right? Like he wasn't close enough, even if he did make a run, but he was absolutely on fire on the front nine. He shot a 5 under 31 on the front. And all of a sudden is like two back and everybody's going, like maybe he posts a 59 or something absolutely bonkers and makes these guys catch him. Mm-hmm. It ended up being the case. Had an even back nine, shooting 5 under on the day.
Yeah.
He posted a T9 top 10, which is great news for all Tiger fans going into Pebble Beach, the US mm-hmm. Open, starting a week from this Thursday after the RBC takes place. So if you're looking for him to use these tournaments in between majors as kind of like a practice ground,
right,
to get competition ready, then it's great news mm-hmm. because he was firing at pins. A couple bad iron shots forced him into some double bogeys that ended up costing his, I think, Thursday and Saturday round to be way worse than he wanted him to, but he looked really, really good.
Yeah, he did. And especially on the front nine, like you said, it was kind of just like, oh boy, this could be really interesting if he continues. Obviously, I don't think a lot of people thought he could shoot another 5 under on the back nine, but it was like, can he get another 2 or 3 on the back nine maybe? And then you're talking, he's up there. He's definitely close to winning the whole thing. But
yeah, he ended up losing by 10.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how low Patrick Cantlay went. I mean, I think after like the 5th or 6th hole, like you mentioned, it was Cantlay, Adam Scott, and Martin Keimer, and that was it. Everybody else was pretty much out of it. The course is going to not necessarily yield super low scores, but there's birdies out there. And right. So you knew that guys were going to go 2 over on the back nine. It wasn't going to happen. Keimer, like you said, got a little hurt, tweaked something, started spraying the ball a little bit, dropped a couple shots, I think 3 in a row. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden it was an Adam Scott, Patrick Cantlay show, and Cantlay just didn't let up.
No.
He made the putts he had to make. He birdied 18, didn't he? Or parred it? Birdied or parred it?
I think he parred it.
Either way, made a big putt, like an 8 footer.
Yeah.
And ended up winning by 2. So congrats to him. But this is his second PGA Tour victory, but this is a big one. This is a tier 3 mm-hmm. PGA Tour tournament course. Yeah. It's a big win for him.
So the one thing that after watching this round, and I was actually with you on Sunday when we were watching the final round, the one thing I feel like they maybe need to go to in golf is the names on the back of the polos, because Cantlay, Scott, and Keimer were all dressed like exactly the same. And I could not tell who was who when they were like showing guys making a swing. And I was like, I think that was Scott. Nope, that might've been Keimer. I don't know who that was, but he put it close to the pin. Like they all looked extremely similar in not only the clothes they were wearing, but like skin tone, like just everything. And I was like, I can't tell you who just shot that shot, cause I don't really know.
Yeah, especially Adam Scott and Martin Keimer. I mean, they're dressing, they're in all black.
With that white hat.
With a white hat.
Yeah.
Like 6'2", lean, built, very technical golf swings. Like, it was literally impossible to tell the difference. So that was like, we were waiting for that name to pop up in the upper right-hand corner of the screen. Yes. To be like, oh, that's who it is. Okay.
Perfect. I didn't know who to root for because I was rooting for Cantlay. And I was like, and I'd be like, oh, what a shot. And then it was like, oh, Martin Keimer was like, no, that's not what I wanted. I didn't want that. I didn't want him to put it close. But yeah, anyways, it was very interesting. The thing for us, we also had good picks in Spieth and Fowler going into the last round. They were right up there, like close to maybe making a push for the win. And then Spieth shot +1 and Fowler shot even. So Fowler stayed at 7 under and Spieth went from 11 under to 10 under, which was, we were pretty spot on our picks. Like we were close. We had a lot of guys in contention there at the end.
Yeah. Spieth T7, Ricky T14. So
yeah,
good showings for both of them.
Yeah, definitely. I just, we like going into Sunday, I was like, wow, we have a lot of names that we picked on last week's podcast that could definitely win today.
So with that said, the RBC Canadian is this week, right? Not a great, we don't have to talk too much about this tournament, but okay. I was actually really surprised, and this is the only reason I want to bring it up. I was really surprised to see the field, especially being the week before a major. Most of the time, the tournament before a major, not a great spot to be. You're not going to get the best of the best, right? A lot of players want to rest, outside of Phil, who just would play on your local Muni tournament if you let him. The guy plays everything.
Wait, have you seen, real quick before you get into this, have you seen his Instagram posts?
Dude, he is losing his mind on social media. Can I throw that out there?
He's not losing his mind.
Well, he's hilarious.
He's hilarious.
He's hilarious, but he's like, he's so into it that it's like a little weird. Like, how long did he milk the calf videos?
Oh, I don't know.
Like flexing the calves?
I think he's still doing that. But he just did another one of like the bump and run. And he's like practicing and he's like, you know, describing it like scientifically about like, you know, the blade and why, if you put it this way and how much it helps, blah, blah, blah. And then he does a practice swing and puts it literally like 6 inches from the pin. And instead of saying anything after he does that, he literally just like stares at the camera with a big grin. And then that's how the Instagram video ends.
Gosh, he continues to find ways to have fans just love him.
Yeah. Yeah,
right? Like he has such a personality.
He does. And I loved his post before the memorial about bringing two drivers. And he's like, one to drop bombs and one to have cute little cuts into the fairway. It's like, yeah, your cute little cut is still like 285, 290.
I know. When the CBS broadcast talks about his social media, like tweets and videos, that's how you know he's making an impact.
Oh, okay. Anyway, so that was my fill. Got to get a little fill in there.
Yeah, yeah. Good sidebar. So,
yeah. What are the odds or who's looking like they could potentially win this weekend?
So just looking at the odds, because it just highlights the best people in this field. Brooks Koepka at 6-1, a DJ at 11-2, Rory at 10-1, Matt Kuchar at 18-1, Scott Piercy 25-1, JT at 16-1. How is Scott Piercy above JT?
Because JT's either gotten hurt before the round started or just not made the cut the last 2 weeks.
Sergio, 25-1, Webb Simpson, blah, yada, yada, yada. But not a super deep field, but to have Brooks, DJ, Rory, and JT all playing this week?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the top three in the world.
I think you're right. Well, no. Technically, Matt Kuchar is winning the FedEx points right now,
which is weird. World golf rankings are Brooks, DJ, Justin Rose, Rory, and then Tiger, and then JT. So if you take JT, Rory, Brooks, and Dustin, you have four of the top six in the world playing in the RBC Canadian, which is surprising to me. And I actually might watch it on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so then let's do one solid pick, one dark horse. I'm extremely nervous this week because I've gotten two in a row correct. Are you ready?
Gosh, how do you not pick Brooks?
You know how you don't pick Brooks? Because you pick Rory.
You going with Rory?
I'm going with Rory.
All right.
I'm going with Rory as my number one, and I think you'll enjoy this. My dark horse, Jason Duffner.
Duffy.
Yeah. I think he's going to figure this course out. He's going to be up in Canada. You know, they're a little nicer up there. He seems to be a little bit more, you know, pleasant on tour than most guys. And I think his personality will vibe well with the Canadian fans.
So I am going to go with DJ for my pick. I just feel like he's been like on the verge of breaking through. And also, He wins a lot of non-majors, right? If you look at his record, like he has a tendency to just rip up these regular tier three and tier four tournaments. I think this being a tier four, in my opinion, even though there's like some good guys at the top.
Well, it can be whatever tier you want because you made up the tier system.
Good point. good point.
So just before you go any further, that's exactly why I didn't pick Brooks. The guy doesn't win tournaments that are majors.
I know. That's a really good point.
So I just kind of feel like, I don't think he's going to get there.
I'll go with DJ and then I think I'm going to go with Webb Simpson as my dark horse.
Ooh, good pick. You said 20-1, 24-1?
20-1. I'm not a Webb fan, but he's had a really good year. And I just don't really like anybody under the top six.
So, fair.
And he's sneaky good. He's sneakily really good at just going out there and like winning golf tournaments. For example, he has a US Open. Like that's ridiculous. And he won the Players by like 9 strokes last year. It's like, so when he's hot, even though his swing is hideous. Like the helicopter finish.
Oh yeah.
Ugh.
Webb Simpson.
Yeah, that's a name.
What do you think was going through his parents' mind when they did that?
Who knows?
Is that his real name? Let's look up if that's his real name.
I don't know. Webb? Like, would it be Webster?
Maybe. No, his real name is James Frederick Webb Simpson. That makes a lot more sense to me.
So James Simpson just wasn't tickling his fancy, huh?
He knew.
Jimmy Simpson?
It was a marketing ploy when he got on tour. He's like, guys, I can't be James Simpson. I got to be Webb. Got to be Webb Simpson. That's the only way people are going to remember my name.
Webb. Bubba Watson's real name is Jerry.
Jerry? Like J-E-R-R-Y?
Oh, G-E-R-R-Y.
I don't know.
That's not Gary, right? It's got to be Jerry. Gary's with an A.
Yeah, it's got to be Jerry, but I don't know if that's how you spell it.
It's Jerry Lester Watson Jr. Bubba is way better.
No wonder he's pissed off all the time.
He's mad at his caddy, like his caddy named him. I didn't name you, bro.
Yeah, that's not me. Jerry Lester?
Jerry Lester.
That's terrible. This would be a good segment for us to do maybe next week or maybe before the next major. The worst real names of golfers.
That would be really good.
I feel, yeah. I mean, Jerry Lester's tough.
I've pulled up an article of the 12 things you didn't know about Webb Simpson.
Okay.
And none of them are interesting.
Now they're all interesting because you said that. Cause I feel like everything's going to be at least a little bit.
No, they're still not.
Nothing.
No, it says like, currently ranked number 16 in the world. His previous best was number 5. Like, how is that something interesting about him? Like, I want to know if he like wrestled gators growing up or something. Like, this is the coolest thing is the fact that his name is James Frederick Simpson. That's the only thing. He went to Wake Forest. He has 5 brothers.
Wow, that's... Jeez.
His wife also goes by her middle name, which is interesting.
Huh. What's her middle name?
Dowd. Her name's Taylor Dowd Keith. She goes by Dowd Simpson. That's an interesting choice.
Their married names are Webb and Dowd. That is awful.
What are they thinking? All right, enough about him.
Well, what about Jason Duffner? Just pulled up some fun facts about Jason Duffner. Born in 1977, he's 42 years old, which immediately makes me regret my decision that he'll win this weekend.
He's 42? Okay. He's like Tiger's age?
He's 42.
That's March crazy. Yeah,
March 24th, 1977. Immediately regret my decision, but that's okay. 5'10", Jason Christopher Duffner. Pretty straightforward name.
Yeah.
Goes by Jason Duffner. He was married once to Barbara Schultz. Divorced. Whoa. His early life? Fort Lauderdale.
Mm.
Yeah. Nothing really spectacular.
Meh.
I would love to like click on one of these and have it be like, oh, Jason Duffner in his spare time crochets. Like, oh, what? See,
that's what I'm talking about. Like, give me some of that information. Give me a little nugget we can hold on to for 10 minutes.
Oh, man. Anything else about the tournament this weekend, like course, or is it pretty straightforward?
I don't know a ton about the course. I think it's, I mean, I remember it being a pretty cool track, but it's not traditionally a tournament that I watch heavily.
Yeah, true.
But I would be really, really interested to see how Brooks plays. I just feel like he's untouchable, and then he gets to tournaments like this, and he gets like 15th, and you're like, how? Like, you're better than everybody else.
Yeah, true. Yeah, like he literally was just smashing everybody in the U.S. Open, and then he goes and plays the Hamilton Golf and Country Club in Canada and can't win. Like,
that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm looking at the scorecard right now. Some bombs. I feel like we talk about this every week, but
yeah,
it's long.
You're not going to pull up a PGA Tour track and it's going to be like 6,200 yards. Like what?
442 par 4. 224 par 3. Oof. 481 par 4. Whew, buddy. The hardest hole on the course is a 412-yard par 4, the 7th. I don't know why. I'm not sure why.
That's cool. I love short. I love tough, short par 4s.
Yeah.
Like the par 4 at Riviera that's drivable. And nobody drives it with like that crazy bull green that's like bunkers on all sides. That's the coolest freaking hole. I love drivable par 4s. Like the most exciting thing to watch, because a 480-yard par 4, those guys go to the tee, they pull driver, and they smash it, and it's whatever.
Yeah,
but true. Drivable par 4, like you want to watch to see what club they pull.
Yeah.
Like, do they pull 6-iron and layup? Do they pull driver? Do they pull 3-wood? Like, there's like decisions to be made, and I'd love to see, especially if they let them talk about it on the broadcast and the caddy and the player going back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best.
Well, that's kind of like, isn't that like the 17th at the Waste Management? Right after the 16th par 3.
Yeah.
You come out, and isn't the 17th like a drivable par 4 where it's like 305 yards, 315 yards maybe, and like
there's water.
Water on the left. Yeah.
Yep.
They got to make a decision.
Yeah, and that hole, I think I've seen people bogey and double bogey that hole.
Yeah, because you go for it.
Well, you would think that you could just go 7-iron lob wedge and putt for birdie every time, but guys want to be aggressive and try to make an eagle, and they make mistakes. It's fun to watch.
True. It's a good point. Well, we'll be rooting for Webb and Jason Duffner simply because they seem boring other than golf.
Yeah, seriously.
Want to give them a little cred to their name. Okay, anything else about golf, or should we kind of transition?
No, let's move on to the NBA.
All right. All right, NBA Finals. It has been an interesting one so far, to say the least. We are at a 1-1 split, so the first two games were in Toronto. Raptors won the first 118-109, and then Warriors won the second 109-104. What are your initial thoughts? Because this is a very, very interesting series to me.
Yeah, I had initially thought that it would be relatively close, my prediction being Golden State in 6. Everybody else's feedback made me think that maybe I was giving Toronto too much credit. And so when Toronto won game 1, I felt a little validated, right? Like, I think that my prediction might be accurate. And I love the fact that this series started off with Toronto taking game 1, even though they're at home and they kind of had to win that game.
Right.
Kawhi Leonard wasn't absolutely outstanding, right? It's not like he went for 44 or 15 and 9.
Right.
He was subpar in the first half, picked it up in the second half, and his supporting cast was fantastic. Siakam went for 14 of 17 from the field.
Yeah, what, 32-8?
Yeah, two for three from three. I mean, most of their team was positive as far as a plus-minus goes. And so I think after game one, and I think it made me realize, like, that's probably what's going to drive this series is Kawhi's going to be Kawhi.
Mm-hmm.
But and most likely Steph's going to be Steph.
Right.
It's the other pieces, right? It's it's Klay and Draymond. It's Siakam and Kyle Lowry, it's right. Marc Gasol. And I think outside of that, the thing that's the most important is Toronto's defense, because they have such a great defensive team that could really guard every position with Siakam and Kawhi and Gasol. And so it's just like...
And even those, Danny Green's a really good defender too.
Yeah, so I mean, take all that in consideration. That's a hell of a defensive team. And so if they could just cause a little bit of havoc... You know, that's a different series. I guess the only thing that doesn't make sense with all of that is they're not really a run and gun type team. So they're really playing like lockdown half court basketball, not necessarily trying to get steals and go on the run.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the way the series is going so far, and it makes me really excited to see the way the next 2 weeks turns out.
Yeah, for sure. So game one was crazy to me because you did also predict that Golden State would come out flat after a 10-day layoff after they won the Western Conference Finals, way before the Raptors did in Game 7. So, that's exactly what happened, right? Like, the Raptors came out strong. They scored like 35 points or 36 points or something ridiculous like that in the second quarter. They're up 10. They look good. Like, Golden State just didn't look good. And even in the second half, they made a couple runs here and there, but it didn't look like ever they were going to actually win the game. Like, it never felt like Golden State was really going to actually come back. And so and the Raptors ended up winning. And I think, like you said, Siakam was obviously the star of that game in particular. There, I saw a stat that he was like one of only five players in his first ever NBA Finals game to go for 35-5, and the only other people were like Allen Iverson and Jordan, Michael Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, that like, makes sense. Like, that is an incredible Finals performance, whatever game it's in.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So to have it be the very first one you play in and you go for 32-8-5 is pretty incredible. But like you said, Kawhi wasn't great in the first game. He was 23-8-5, which like are still phenomenal numbers, right? Like nobody's saying that's a bad game, but it's not necessarily what Kawhi's done all of the playoffs. And so to think like, wow, to me, I went after game one, I was like, oh boy, that's not good. Like Kawhi didn't have a great game and they won by 9 and it looked pretty handily. You know, like you had Siakam play like that and Gasol was on fire. Kyle Lowry didn't do too much, and he actually didn't do too much in game two. But I left after that first game. I was kind of like, ooh, I don't know if I like my prediction of Golden State in five. You know, like that obviously didn't sit well with me. And then game two, I had like the exact opposite feeling, right? Because then in game two, Golden State came out and they won 109-104. But Klay Thompson got hurt with like 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Kevon Looney got hurt like in the middle of the third quarter. And so they were playing a little bit out of their normal rotation. And they were literally, after Klay Thompson got hurt in the rest of the fourth quarter, like triple teaming Steph Curry at points. Like they're in a box and one. It's like one guy is just literally following Steph around wherever he wants. The other four guys are just standing in his zone and like double teaming him every time he touches the ball. And there were a couple times where he would like be double teamed and like trying to dribble out of it. And a third guy would kind of like come and try and close the gap. And it was just like, wow. The fact that they were able to pull out a win when that's kind of the defense that Toronto was throwing at them, and Steph was really only the offensive player doing anything really that game after Klay went out, was pretty impressive to me.
Yeah, I mean, that entire game was the first 5 minutes of the third quarter.
Oh, absolutely.
Right,
oh,
like and Golden State got super, super hot. Toronto went ice cold. And all of a sudden it was like, you know, this is lopsided.
Yeah, so Golden State ended up scoring. They went on a 20-0 run. I have a stat here. So when combined with the final 2 minutes, the Warriors scored to close out the half, which was two free throws by Curry. The Warriors scored 20 unanswered points, which is the largest run in an NBA Finals game since the NBA-ABA merger in 1976-77 season.
Dang, that's crazy.
Yeah, and like that never happens, right? Because it's like the perfect combination of like Golden State was kind of getting going and the Raptors were just like falling apart. And like that doesn't ever happen because usually you get like a dunk or a layup or a foul where somebody like makes a free throw, but that's not what happened. And so 20 unanswered points and then, you know, it was what it was. But even still, the Raptors climbed back in because they were down by, what, 11 or 12 at 1.2 and they cut it to like 4. And then they could have got it, or even, no, 2. Yeah, they cut it to 2 with like a minute left, right? And then they could have got a steal, or no.
I don't think it was that close. It was like, well, yeah, it was. Yeah, at one point, they had a chance.
They were down 6 with like 45 seconds left. And then Golden State kind of dribbled it out. They almost got a steal. And then Iguodala hit the 3 with.
Yeah, that's right.
6 seconds left.
So if you look at the stats, as far as team stats go, I think they indicate that the Raptors so far have been better.
Oh, 100%.
Like, I agree. If you look at game one, Golden State shot 44% from the field and 40% from three. Like, that's totally legit. Like, you could win a basketball game with those numbers. Mm-hmm. And Toronto's 50% from the field, 40% from three. So they played slightly better. They beat Golden State when Golden State played a good game. Steph was 8 of 18. Klay was 8 of 17. They're 4 and 9 and 3 of 6 from 3. They both played solid. Like, neither one of them went lights out, but Steph had 34 points. They played just fine. Toronto just straight up beat them.
Yeah.
In game two, Toronto shot 37% from the field and only 28% from 3, so substantially worse, and had a legitimate chance to win the game with a minute left.
Yeah.
So like if especially if you look at it now with Klay having a minor hamstring injury being questionable for game three, if he doesn't play and Steph is out there on an island with the entire freaking Toronto Raptors team guarding him,
yeah,
like you're looking at Draymond and Iguodala and Livingston.
Yeah.
I mean, you're looking at some
Cousins.
Yeah, you're looking at some guys to score some points that traditionally the Warriors haven't leaned on all season. Mm-hmm. And that puts a lot of pressure on those guys to score, because although Steph can create his own shot from time to time, like, he works the best when there's two or three different guys on the floor that are big threats, because then at least somebody's going to get open.
Right.
Double team him all game long. Like, he's, I don't think, he doesn't have the length to stretch the floor like KD does, you know?
Right. And even, like, I feel like most NBA players, if they're double teamed, can't really do much ever. Even if you're the best player in the world, like, if they just run two defenders at you, those guys are also professional basketball players, right? Yeah. So you think two professional basketball players on one, regardless if you're the best player in the world or top 10 or whatever it is, like, it's still two on one. So, like, you're just going to get rid of the ball because it's a better basketball play to pass it to a wide open guy, right? Like, and then you just have to bank on that the other guy on your team is going to make the right decision or be able to make a basket. And that was another stat that I pulled up, which was insane, because I didn't actually know this, but Andre Iguodala, who obviously hit the kind of clinching three with 6 seconds left, that was the only points that Golden State had in the final 5.5 minutes of the game, which is absolutely crazy as well. However, before that, entering into game two, Iggy had shot 0-for-11 from behind the arc in the previous four games.
0-for-11?
0-for-11. And so in the previous four games, he was 0-for-11. He made one other three-pointer at the beginning of this game. So he was 1-for-3, and then he ended up 2-for-4 in this game. But before that was literally hadn't made a three-pointer in the previous four games.
Well, they let him take that shot.
Yeah, they were kind of like, well, he's of everyone like on the court right now. Yeah, all right, we'll let him take it.
And then I think Steph said afterwards when the reporters asked him, like, what do you think about the closing minutes, blah, blah, blah. And they said, well, it's disrespectful to Iggy that they left him open with the game on the line. And then now that you say that, it's kind of like, well, no, it wasn't. Like,
they were taking their odds at that point, right? Like,
yeah, like, that was the right decision. Like, let a guy that hasn't shot well take that shot and make sure that freaking Steph doesn't take it. And that's what they did. And I mean, he hit it.
And I mean, it worked out for sure. But the tale of the two games to me is very interesting, right? Because in the first game, the losing team had Steph Curry, who went for 34 points, scored the most points out of everybody, and didn't get a ton of help from everyone else other than Thompson, who had 21. But in the second game, same thing happened, but reverse. Kawhi Leonard had 34, and then everyone else had 13, 12, 8, 6, right? Like, so is the NBA Finals more about, like, the other four guys on the court doing something?
Yeah.
Because clearly it's not about the star. I mean, like, right now Steph's averaging like 29 points between the first two games, and Kawhi Leonard's averaging 27, 28, whatever it is. Like, they're doing their job when you break it down, but it really comes down to, like, do you get the help from the supporting cast?
Yeah. And I think anytime you have a team that doesn't have like a trio of stars, like the Heat did, or like the Cavs did, or even like Kobe and Shaq, or, you know, you have KD and Stephen Clay. Like, anytime you have a team that's really one really, really good player and then a supporting cast, you have to lean on that supporting cast. Like, LeBron is probably the only example of somebody that literally did it by himself.
Right.
When he beat Golden State in that NBA Finals, and it was like, supporting cast is going to be what it is. I'm going to put this whole team on my back.
Yeah.
Very, very few players in history, probably just two, right? There's probably just LeBron and MJ can do that. And Kawhi's going to need those guys. Like, he's going to need at least Marc Gasol and Kyle Lowry to be reasonable 20-point scores with good field goal percentages and some guys to play defense. He can take care of the rest.
Yeah.
But they can't just lay down and shoot 30%. Otherwise, they can't win.
Right. And I feel like, for me, what I've seen from the first two games is, without KD, this has become much more of like a one star on each team. And then, obviously, Golden State, I think, to me, has the next kind of two best players in Klay Thompson and even Draymond Green. But, like, I feel like the rest of everybody on the other four spots on each team are relatively similar.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I think Klay as a number two behind Steph is a lot different than Klay as a number three behind KD and Steph.
Absolutely, 100%. Right?
Like, he gets way more attention. His looks aren't as open, and he's kind of forced to create his own shot, I think, more often than he would like to.
Right.
Now, he played well last game in game two. He was 10 of 17 from the floor, 4 of 6 from 3, 25 points.
But he had like one of those halves where it was like, okay, he's on fire right now. Cause I think he had like 21 at halftime.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, or something along those lines, right? Like he came out and was just like gangbusters, got a couple easy layups, a couple like fouls and free throws. And then like, and then he hit a couple threes, you know? So I think he like started off super hot. And then the third quarter, they kind of locked him down a little bit more. And then that's when Steph took over.
Well, he's just really, really streaky.
Yeah.
Like he's a very, I mean, he's the streakiest player. He's probably the streakiest player I've ever seen, right? He scored 37 points in a quarter?
Quarter, yeah.
Like, and yet he's never scored 80 points in a game. Like, well, obviously he's hot and cold. And when he's hot with his quick release and his length, holy freaking crap. Like, my opinion would be if that guy makes three shots in a row, you double team him the next three possessions.
Yeah.
Because you do not want him to get on fire because then he can't stop him. Then he'll literally just shoot from anywhere. And then if you put halftime in the middle of it, he'll come back and he'll be totally, mediocre is probably an insult, but he'll be back to the regular Klay Thompson for the second half because he can't keep that going. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's always been that way. And that's also why he's such a weapon, is because if you get him going, whoo.
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't know. I just, I'm thoroughly enjoying the series so far. And I didn't know how I would feel about it without having LeBron in it for the last, 8 years or 6 years, whatever it was.
Yeah.
But it has been very interesting. And I think Kawhi Leonard has stepped in as that LeBron-esque figure. You know, that he is just such an athletic specimen and does everything on the floor at all times that he kind of has that same impact on a game. Not nearly as much yet, but I feel like he is definitely in cut from that same cloth.
Yeah, I don't think he has quite the athleticism that LeBron had at his age, but the ability to play both sides of the basketball and the ability to dominate a game is very similar to LeBron, and it's been great to watch. The only thing I'm disappointed in so far is the amount of time between games.
Oh, I hate that. I hate they give him an extra day.
Like, I know it's a thing for injuries, right? Like, Klay Thompson's a good example. KD's a good example. They want these guys to be able to come back. You know, Adam Silver wants the superstars in the game. The people paying millions of dollars for ads want the superstars in the game for ratings and this and that. But it's like, I get so excited. We watched it on Sunday, and now I got to wait till Wednesday and then Saturday. And it's like, this is going to take forever. And I also feel like after Toronto won that game one, I'm thinking momentum.
Right.
And it's impossible to have momentum when you play once every 4 days.
Yep. Agreed.
Like, it's gone. Like, every game is, you just start from scratch.
Yeah. It's such a bummer. Especially on the days that they travel, because then it's like they played Sunday and they won't play again until Wednesday. And it just feels like so long when all you have in between that is literally like MLB.
That's it.
You don't have anything else.
Golf.
But it doesn't even start till Thursdays. So technically, we haven't had anything.
It's rough, man. It's rough.
We need the Cornhole Championship to come back.
Seriously, I got to watch that. I watched some Spike Ball.
Ooh,
they, on TV the other day. Oh, my gosh. Those guys are nuts.
They're really good. I feel like we could give it a run.
I know. I watched some of their shots, and it was like, oh, you did this whole, you know, run over and hit it between the legs thing. And I'm like, I feel like I've done that before.
Yeah, we have. We've played spike ball multiple times, and they're playing on grass, which you can move a little better than when we play on sand.
I feel like it should be played on sand, though.
Nah, I do too. It seems like a beach game.
Yeah, and you can lay out.
Yeah,
grass is a little. I mean, that's the same way with volleyball, right? Like, beach shows you who's the best, because you need true athleticism playing in the sand, because it's just that much harder.
Yeah, it's a fair point. Well, anything else about the NBA Finals? Like, do you still like your prediction after the first two games?
I do. I'd like to lean more towards Toronto, because I feel like they've been the better team to this point, but they've played at home both games. Yeah, and true. Golden State has had some things not go their way. They've had Klay get a little bit injured. Boogie stepped up in game two.
He did. He played well.
He looks like he's probably going to start moving forward. And so maybe that's an X factor we didn't think about that hopefully replaces. It's not going to replace the loss of KD, but it could help with Klay's injury.
Yeah, true.
And I wouldn't be stunned if Golden State wins them both at home, because you just can't be shocked at anything they do at this point. So I'm sticking with my prediction, but I'm definitely you know, rooting for Toronto to steal one and really make this a series.
Yeah. And I say Golden State in five, based on just that they swept Portland in the Western Conference Finals. I don't feel nearly as confident about that. I still think they're going to win, but I do think that Toronto's going to get another one here some at some point. Whether they steal one in Golden State, I don't think so, but definitely when it goes back to Toronto,
yeah,
a clinching game, I just don't see them losing game five, you know, but then I see it more along the lines of your prediction of Golden State in six when it goes back to the Bay.
With Boogie Cousins as NBA Finals MVP.
I don't know if you can give it to somebody that averages only 11 and 10.
He's only played one game. He's going to average 35 and 15 for the rest of the series.
Oh, but before we move on to the Blitz Package, actually, this is kind of a Blitz Package question, so we'll just transition very smoothly into the Blitz Package. Sure. I read an article today about, and this goes kind of to the question we had last week, but I read an article today about somebody paid $50,000 per ticket for two courtside seats at game three of the NBA Finals.
$50,000?
They bought two tickets that came out to like $102,000 for two courtside seats. Wow. Would you ever spend that much money, even if you won the Mega Millions or Powerball, whichever one is at like $450 million right now, would you ever spend $100,000 to sit courtside?
If I had $400 million in this Mega Ball world you speak of, and like my Clippers were playing, like, yeah, I would.
So here's my question. I didn't really have... True. I didn't really have a question constructed. I just remembered that I had read that. But I guess now that I'm thinking about it, like, if I was going to spend $100,000, I guess for me, I'd rather spend it in like an 8-person suite where the food is paid for, the drinks are paid for, and you can have like 8 of your friends there as opposed to two courtside seats.
True. But I think being on the floor, game three though, like how about game six?
That's what I'm saying. Like if it goes to
or seven,
if it goes to game six and it's back in Golden State, that's got to go up by another $5,000 to $10,000 per ticket. Right?
Oh, easy.
I don't know. So I didn't really have a question, but I guess like when I read it, I was kind of like, if I had that much money to where I had disposable income to drop $100,000 on a basketball game, I would rather do it in a suite, like mid-level with 8 of my friends where food and drink is paid for. Cause I feel like that's a better experience.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess sitting courtside would be a lot of fun. Cause you're right there. You get to see how big, strong, fast these athletes are. But at the same time, like, I don't know. I mean, that's so much money.
I think the courtside experience is probably, because obviously I've never done it, absolutely incredible. But if you've done it before, right? And mm-hmm. I would imagine that if you're spending $100,000 on tickets, you've probably done it before.
True.
Then I totally agree with you. Like, I've seen these guys. I've seen all the big stars up close and personal. Like, I want to have it, like, let's have 10 of my friends in this suite and let's get free drinks and food and just have an absolute blast. That sounds like way more fun.
Yeah, fair. So I don't even know. That wasn't really even a question. Just kind of a discussion on how much money. But
is that what Drake pays every game?
There's no way. Toronto's got to be cheaper than that. I mean, I don't know. They'll probably come out with something.
But yeah, you're right. It's a Bay Area. I mean, geez. Yeah.
Bay Area, and they're going back home now after being tied 1-1. Like, I feel like ticket prices also fluctuate based on how the series is going.
Of course.
Like, yeah. So like if Golden State was going back up 2-0, those would probably be like $30,000 tickets on front. You know what I mean? Because like the games aren't nearly as important per se, but I don't know. It, very interesting. I would love to just have that much money to just throw at a game, but
yeah, seriously.
Anywho, speaking of winning big, my Blitz Package question, you know what this last weekend also was?
What?
National Spelling Bee Championship.
What? No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was. And I think you probably know where this is headed. And I can't wait for you to try to spell some words. But first, before we go there, I got some stats. This was an unprecedented National Spelling Bee Championship. You know why? Because on the 92nd annual event, there was 2 6-way ties that had never happened before. And they ended up having co-champions, 8 of them. Because they ran out of words.
What?
8 co-champions of the National Spelling Bee.
They don't have a tiebreaker situation?
So my thing is, like, just flip open the dictionary and pick one. But apparently when you go through when you go through 17 rounds of, you know, there's 300, 350 kids, you're probably running out of words that are actually considered hard.
That is insane.
Yeah. So they had 8 champions. But what I did is I did a little research because I wanted to know, like, what do these kids win, right? Because obviously it's a big deal. Like, this is a huge thing. It's on TV, so it's got to be pretty big. What do you think first place wins?
How old are they? Like 12?
Anywhere from, like, I think like 8 to 15, 16, maybe. Maybe a little younger than that.
My guess would be that there's some sort of scholarship money involved.
It's a good guess. How much would you say?
It's maybe like $100,000 scholarship.
Okay, that's a good guess. I did not think that it would be that high, but here's what first place wins. They win $50,000 cash.
What?
And an engraved trophy. They also get $2,500 cash from Merrimack Webster. They also get access to the reference library, but nerd alert, whatever. And then they also get $400 worth of reference works and a replica 1768 set of encyclopedias.
Wow. So some of those sponsors need to pick up their games because they're getting a $50,000 check and then Webster's like, hey, I'll give you $2,500. They're like, oh, congratulations, loser.
$2,500 and all the references that you want to read through. Like, no, like, I want more money.
Step up your game, Webster.
But they also get a trip to New York to be on Live with Kelly and Ryan and a trip to Hollywood to be on Jimmy Kimmel Live. That's pretty cool.
That is really, really cool.
It'll be interesting to see how that all plays out with 8 of them going. But yes, there were 8 champions. And per usual, after the National Spelling Bee Championship, I quiz you with words to see if you are able to spell them with either or. So,
shoot.
I'm going to try to read these, but like reading them is hard enough.
Oh, that's great. That gives me tons of confidence.
Yeah. So this first word, owslout. The definition, the final sound in a word or syllable, the end position of a sound in a word or syllable. Owslout.
What's the origin?
I don't know. Doesn't say it here, but I'm going to say French.
I'm going to go...
Oh, German.
German, okay. German.
Yeah.
I'm going to go A-U-S.
Ooh, good start.
L-O-U-T.
Auslaut. A-U-S-L-A-U-T. The double German, the double German owl, as they say.
No, I thought I knew that, but I didn't. I didn't know that.
Okay. This one, I think I know how to say, but we'll see. Bougainvillea.
Bougainvillea. I've heard that before.
Yeah. It is any genus of the 4 o'clock family of ornamental tropical American woody vines and shrubs with brilliant purple or red floral bracts.
Oh, not what I was thinking of.
So the bougainvillea, it is first known use was 1849 Latin.
Bougainvillea.
Sorry, you left out about 7 letters. Bougainvillea.
Wow, that's French.
Yeah, that is a tough one.
Yeah.
Especially because I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, so I'm sorry, but whatever. It is what it is. Okay. We'll give you here. This is a French one, for real. Aiguillette. Specifically, a shoulder cord worn by designated military aides. Aiguillette.
A-U-G-U-E-L-E-T-T.
Oh, man. You're much closer on that. You had a lot of the, like, bass letter sounds, you know, like the T-T at the end, but...
Yeah.
It's a A-I-G-U-I-L-L-E-T-T-E.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of letters.
So let me just remind you that these are the final words that the kids got right to win it.
Wow. That's crazy.
Do you feel like you have one more in you, or is that enough?
No, do one more. I feel like I'm getting better.
Let me find. Okay. This one might be. Okay. Paloma. The webbing on the feet of aquatic birds. Paloma. Latin.
Paloma. P-A-U-L-A-M-A.
Oh, you are so close, though. P-A-L-A-M-A. No, you.
That's so close. Phonetic.
I feel like you talked yourself out of getting that one correct, right? You're like, Paloma, Paloma. There's no way I got to enter like some other consonant somewhere in here because it can't just be the A-L-A-M-A.
Yeah, that's too – these words are normally not that straightforward.
Yeah, but like here's my other thing. Like these words are not only like hard to spell, but like who actually ever uses these in like a conversation?
They don't. The spelling bee is about understanding language of origin.
True.
It's about understanding like how it's used in a sentence. Like I think they study like those nuances of language.
Right.
And so even though somebody says a word that they've never heard before, they put those pieces together and then they get them right, which is absolutely unbelievable because the way you traditionally learn to spell things is by just memorizing them.
Yeah.
But I don't think they do that. There's too many words to do that.
It's crazy. Yeah. Well, and it's crazy to think that they can, like these kids are 12 years old, but
I know. That's nuts. So,
anywho, 8 champions. Congrats to all of them. Crazy. Spelling bee. It's kind of a lot of fun to watch. I feel bad for how nervous the kids get, but at the same time, they're crushing it. And I didn't realize that basically, almost 60 grand of cash was on the line. So good for them.
I know. Seriously.
Yeah.
So do they pay 50 grand to all of them now?
I would think they would have to, right? Technically.
Gosh. They all got
first place.
Somebody's upset. Just paid out 8 times what they normally do. Webster's stoked. He's like, yeah, that's why I only give 2,500.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, dang, all those, 1768 replicas we got to give out, though. That's a bummer, but whatever. 2,500. So, anyhow, what do you got for me?
All right, so this is a little bit premature, but since we might not do this again until post-NBA finals, when we do it post-NBA finals, we're going to have to talk about the finals for a solid hour.
Yeah. Should we explain why, maybe real quick?
Sure, go ahead.
Well, so I'm going to Mexico this weekend for a wedding, but then I leave on Tuesday for my honeymoon, going to Ireland and Italy. Got a great trip planned. A lot of pubs in Ireland, a lot of restaurants in Italy, which I feel like is the only way to kind of see both of those two countries. I'm going to come back, and I already talked to Alex about doing this. We're going to have a ranking of the best pubs in Dublin. Cause I figured you might want to know about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Like best beer and whiskey / ambiance, music, whatever it may be. Like what are the top 5, whatever. But so we're going to have a ranking system and hopefully remember all of them, but we'll see.
Yeah.
So anyways, we may not do it for the next couple of weeks because of that.
Just remember my grandpa's advice. Beware of the food in Italy.
You said that.
That's the weirdest thing anybody's ever
said. The food, I got this the skinny piece of bruschetta or ham. He called it ham. So I got the skinny piece of ham. I could see through it. And I was like, this is disgusting. I'm going to McDonald's. So go to McDonald's because they're really good in Italy. It's like, what? That's probably like a super expensive piece of like Italian, I don't even know, ham,
prosciutto. Worst advice of all time.
Oh, so anyway, sorry to cut you off, but yeah, go ahead.
All right. So the free agency situation post-NBA could be legendary.
Yeah, could.
It is very possible that KD, Anthony Davis, Klay Thompson, Kyrie Irving, and Kawhi Leonard all change teams. If that happens and all of them leave, none of them stay in their current teams, where do you want them to go?
Oh.
You could choose. And let's throw a little bit of reason in there. You can't just say all the Celtics.
That's what I was going to say. Well, and like for me, it's one of those things that's such a bummer because remember, that's where KD was going to go before he went to Golden State. That was number one on his list, and then he switched at the end. I don't think – the only one that I think has a legitimate chance of ending up in Boston is AD because they have the biggest trading power right now for what the Pelicans want. So if I had to guess, I would say – AD to Boston. I would say KD and Kyrie to the Knicks. And who is the other one?
Clay and Kawhi.
Oh, I think Clay stays in Golden State, and I do think Kawhi goes to the Clippers.
Nice.
But you said that they couldn't stay, right?
Yeah, so if Clay doesn't stay, where would you want him to go?
Oh, so if he doesn't stay, what I would want to happen is that he goes to the Clippers with Kawhi because I think that would be a pretty good duo, both super long 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", guards that he can shoot and play defense. Kawhi's obviously all around. I think you pair those two with like a Gallinari and you got a pretty good threesome.
So, gosh, that's so similar to what I wrote down. I had Clay and Kawhi to the Clippers. A lot of sources saying Kawhi has a good chance to land in the Clippers. I feel like it'd be a great fit for LA. Who doesn't love living in LA? And he doesn't have the ego to want to be
a Laker.
I don't want to say not to be a Laker, but to care if he's not on the franchise that's historically had the most base, blah, blah, blah. I think Kawhi and Clay would be a fantastic duo, especially with how much disruption Kawhi can cause on both sides, and then Clay sitting at the three-point line. Amazing. I have Kyrie and KD to the Knicks. Mm-hmm. I don't know that happens, but I feel like I want that to happen. I'm not a huge fan of either of them, to be honest.
I've really grown irritated of what's his name?
Kyrie?
Kyrie. Sorry. There's so many Kawhis, Clays, Kevins. I forgot which K it was. Kyrie's just really irritated me this whole year. I think he was terrible in the locker room in Boston. I think he was a prima donna. I think he's very, very good. But I think that he did more harm than he did good this year in Boston. And I just don't know if I really actually care where he ends up.
Yeah, I think I feel a very similar way about KD in that when he was with Oklahoma City, he seemed like this absolutely incredible basketball player that had a great heart, and he just wanted to win, and that's why he left, and so you couldn't really fault him. And then all of a sudden he gets to Golden State, where it's a bigger media market, and the press is kind of all over him, and he just was whining and complaining and just couldn't handle the press. And
he's got burner accounts. He's got like 5 Twitter accounts.
Yeah, his personality changed. His public perception changed so much in this time for Golden State. So I almost feel like, I don't know if you want to go to the Knicks if that's your personality.
True.
But I mean, both of those guys I don't care a ton about. So go to the Knicks. Let's please the fans in MSG. Let them see some good basketball, and maybe you can bring that franchise back to something decent because they're both great players. So they can start to get along with each other. Those two guys together could be fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's talks that the two of them have already discussed going to New York. And that looks like it may be the best fit for the two of them because they also have 2 max contracts, I believe. So the only other place I would like to see KD go, only because it would be back to his hometown and to a pretty decent backcourt duo, if he went back to Washington to D.C. because he could be with Bradley Beal and John Wall, who have proven to be a pretty deadly backcourt, and I think could be a good...
Have they, Tony?
Well, the last couple of years before this one, they made the playoffs, made a pretty deep run in both, but you think if they're now your second and third option?
True. But I feel like they need the ball.
Oh, right? True, like, especially John Wall.
Yeah, John Wall's a ball hog, and so to put KD with him, like, does that work?
Yeah, true.
My last pick, AD, was tough for me because I initially thought, like, well, maybe Philly, right? Like, Philly has a lot of pieces they could move.
For who? Like Joel Embiid?
Yeah, and then I was like, wow, the big for big, like, doesn't really work. Like, they're probably pretty sold on Embiid. He's pretty incredible, blah, blah, blah. Is AD better? Like, yeah, probably. So I thought, Like, what about the Lakers? Like, LeBron and AD would be a hell of a combination. The Lakers could be signing up for putting somebody behind LeBron that could be their A1 superstar in 3 years. And both of them need the ball, but not enough to take away from each other to where they couldn't both be really successful. So since this question is, where would you want them to go? I think I would like to see that. And I'd love to see the Clay and Kawhi and the Clippers versus AD and LeBron and the Lakers. I mean, basketball in LA. Whew,
yeah.
Awesome.
Well, I know this is like a kind of a domino effect. And what I would want to see, and I think I've said this on the podcast before, is if Kawhi and AD paired up somewhere.
Yeah.
I would love that duo because I feel like they're both just extremely good defenders, athletic, work their tails off, seem relatively low key personality wise, you know, and good locker room guys. And I think the two of them, like if they both ended up for the Clippers, that would be a hell of a duo.
The Clippers are in a good position with a great owner and with tons of money and a really good, a team that really doesn't have a star that made the flipping playoffs.
I know.
And took a game off of Golden State.
I know, which is crazy.
So, I mean,
think about Clippers took a game off of Golden State and Portland didn't.
I know. I mean, and the Clippers traded away their best players halfway through the season.
They're like, hey, we're tanking. Oh, crap. Actually, we're not tanking.
We're still pretty good. So, I'm excited for I'm excited to see how this offseason pans out. I think it's going to be good.
Yeah, I think there's I feel like was it 2015 that the last major like free agency bubble was?
Well, I mean LeBron is obviously a big.
Well, when did KD leave? Yeah, 3 years ago, right?
Yeah, 15.
So it would have been after the 15-16 season.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's going to be fun. And I love when pieces move. I feel like this is what makes the NBA fun is because you just never know where people are going to go.
Yeah, I agree. I love watching the beginning of the next season because it's like you get to watch brand new teams. In the NBA, one guy controls so much that if a superstar moves from team to team, it's a brand new team.
Yeah, agreed. You know? Agreed. Well, that's kind of it. Unless do you have any more for the...
I'm good,
that's
man.
It. You know, you can never go back unless you're Brew McCoy. Just remember that. Kick off.
Yeah, exactly.
Anywho, we're going to try to do one next week. If we can't do one next week, it'll be a couple, but we'll have a good one when we do show back up.
All right.
Sound good?
All right, go Raptors.
Go Steph Curry. Why you always say